That psychosis business is an interesting business. You see, if you go through the doorway too fast and you're not ready for it, and you're getting bound hand and foot and thrown out in outer darkness, you may land anywhere. And lots of people land in mental hospitals. And the reason they do that is because they went in through the door with their ego. See, they said, like, wow, I've been invited to the wedding feast. I mean, dig me, Sam Jones in heaven. You know, Sam Jones standing at the right side of the Lord. There's the Lord, and there's Gabriel, and there's Sam Jones. They don't understand that you got to die to be born. That only when you have been born again do you enter the kingdom of heaven. So they've gone in on the first round. And what happens is they go on a huge ego trip. And it's called the messianic complex. It's called paranoia. Delusions of grandeur. I have a brother who is in a mental hospital. He thinks he is Christ. Well, that's groovy. I am Christ also. But he doesn't think I'm Christ. He just thinks he's Christ. Because it happened to him, and he took his ego with him. So he says, like, I'm special. And when I say to him, sure, man, you're Christ, I'm Christ too, he says, you don't understand. And so when he's out, he steals cars and things like that because he needs them. Because he's Christ, it's all right. So they lock him up. He says, I don't know. He said, me, I'm a responsible member of society. I go to church. Me, they put in a mental hospital. You, you've got a beard, you wear a dress. You, you're out free. Sure, because as far as I'm concerned, we're all God. That's the difference. That's the difference. And if you really think another guy's God, he doesn't lock you up. It's funny about that. But you got to be really pure. You got to really think it. You can't just make believe you think it. Anything less than total purity, back out in outer darkness. Send him around again. Send him around again. That's what you learn after a couple of hundred psychedelic trips. Boy, I might as well get straight because I'm getting to feel like a yo-yo. I keep going up and coming down, up and down. As long as there's an up and down, as long as there's a high and a low in your head, outer darkness. As long as you're in the world of yin and yang, outer darkness. It takes a lot of purification. Purification of what? Purification of thought, purification of body, freedom from attachment. Freedom from attachment. And after a long time of going up and down, without understanding why I was going up and down or how to stop it, how to stop the going down, slowly, slowly it dawned on me. Now, why did I keep trying? The answer is very simple, and almost all of you know the answer already. The answer is once the seed is in you, you don't have any choice. Again, it's karma. I mean, I keep raising that nasty word, and I'll define it in a moment, but it's built into you. Once you have seen what it all is like, you just can't go back to playing bridge. It just doesn't make it. It's like, imagine you're prepubescent. You're just at puberty, see? And you have been playing hide-and-seek. Or you've been playing baseball, and you collect baseball cards, and you're really into collecting baseball cards. and Coca-Cola caps that have baseball players, and you're really into it. I mean, really. I mean, it's really important. Really important. And then some strange thing happens, uncontrolled by you, and you find yourself turned on by the chick next door. And through some strange set of circumstances, you find yourself kissing her, and all kinds of lights flash. Well, from that moment on, the baseball cards are just different. They're just different. You can go back and say, well, that's all interesting, but the baseball cards are really what's important. That's called defense. The thing happened, the seed got planted. No turning back. No turning back. Once you sense the possibility, once you just feel that other thing inside of you, you start in this most almost, it's completely unconscious mechanism of searching, listening for the messages. Do you know? Do you know? Do you have the key? Where's the next message? Where's the next message? And the interesting thing is, there is always the next message, and it's always available to you. Now, that's a hard one. Some of you, I mean, this is like, I'm going through this thing of, like, people saying, what's going to happen when you go away? Who's going where, first of all? Second of all, it has nothing to do with me. The process is going on in each individual. Whenever you're ready, you hear the next message. The next message is where you are when you're ready to hear the next message. If you come here this evening and you don't know what the hell I'm talking about, you're not ready to hear this message. And you can be sitting here and there's no message. Somebody else comes here and they say, wow, that's the message I was waiting for. Both of you are in this room at this very moment. The handwriting is always on the wall saying, magic theater for madmen only, price of admission, your mind. Hermann Hesse's metaphor from Steppenwolf. Always there. The question is, can you see it? The funny thing about all of the secrets of the East, or of the secrets of mysticism, is they're not secrets. Nobody's saying, don't tell him. They're telling you, they're yelling at it, saying, except ye be converted and become as little children, you shall not enter the kingdom of heaven. That's a secret. Think of how many times you heard that, and you said, well, yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, great. That's a minister talking. He's doing his thing. He's got to earn a living, too. He's a good guy. Because you can't, it isn't a, the secret is a secret to you because of where your head is at. Your receiving mechanism isn't tuned for that particular frequency. Okay, now, no nonsense. How do I really think it is? I've been on a trip now. My trip has taken me through psychology, more or less responsibly. Then it took me from my academic career, psychology, into psychedelics and exploring the within chemically, which led me to end my psychology career rather dramatically by being fired from Harvard. Then I pursued the psychedelics for a long time, and then I got that feeling of being a yo-yo, and then I finally went to the East looking for seeing if anybody knew anything else, since I didn't know enough to figure out how to do this trip. I couldn't stay inside the door. I didn't know what to do next. I kept reading the books, but I didn't understand them. They were yelling the secrets, but I couldn't hear them because I was looking at them from the wrong place. That was my problem. And I couldn't get my head in the right place to see where they were about. Because I still wanted to know I knew, see? I was still Western rational man. We'll figure this thing out. Psychic phenomena, very interesting. We certainly must do further research. So I went and I looked and I looked and I looked, and as long as I looked like a rational man looking, I didn't find anything. I just found my own shadow all the time. So all you can ever find is yourself. You only read yourself, you only talk to yourself, you only ever know yourself. That's all there is. That's all there is, strangely enough. And then I gave up. I saw that my whole game didn't work. Didn't work. It gave me all the rewards that were seemed to be offered, but it didn't work. It didn't, you know, there was that place in me that knew it wasn't working. I knew there was something else, and I couldn't get to it. Couldn't get to it. That point I gave up, and then I was ready for the next message, and then the next message was standing right there. It was sitting right in the hippie restaurant, the Blue Tibetan restaurant, in Kathmandu, Nepal. And the message took me by the hand and took me the whole trip and took me to my next message giver, who was a being who had finished the trip. He didn't come down anymore. He was inside the gates. There he was. He was a realized being. And he did the thing. He blew my mind. He finished me with my rational trip. That is a brief chronology of the series of dramas that unfolded in this illusion that one calls sadhana, or spiritual path. Now, after having studied psychology and guided psychedelic trips and read Eastern books and met realized beings and listened to innumerable stories from people about other realized beings and their own trips and inner heads and been a psychotherapist for 10 years and all, this is the way it looks to me. I'm not asking anybody to buy anything. There's no sale going on here. No sale. Because there's nobody sending a message. You and I are here. We're observing this process. That's all that's going on. If I'm trying to convince you, I might just as well pack up my whatever holy men have and wend my way down Third Avenue. Because if I'm trying, I can be assured of failure. There's no trying. Because there's no you and there's no me. Here we are. We're just exploring how it is. I'm our mouth. I'm our mouth. I once took LSD with Alan Watts and his wife, and he started to talk, and he talked for 8 hours. And at first I got uptight. I mean, you know, like, I know something. Why doesn't he ask me, you know? Like, he's just going to talk all night? And then it dawned on me that he was just our mouth. He was our mouth. And it was beautiful because every time our thoughts didn't fit with what he was saying, what he was saying would change. He was extremely sensitive. And he was the most erudite mouth I've ever spoken through. How is it? How is it then? Statement number one. we, rational man, is not the highest being on the evolutionary scale at this moment. There are beings that are realized beings that do not live in bodies whose awareness functions at a higher rate of vibration than ours does. They do not process data through gross senses, through eyes, ears, nose, mouth, skin, or do they know through their intellect? That's statement number one. Statement number two, we are all eligible to enter the next evolutionary stage to the extent that we are able to extricate ourselves from the time-space locus in which we find ourselves. By which I mean changing one's vibrational rate, if you will. Available to everybody. It has nothing to do with you got to wait till you die. It's available right here now, this minute, here and now. In fact, if you could turn off your senses and turn off your intellect right now, you'd be here. You'd really be here. It's as simple as that. You don't have to plan, shall I go become enlightened or become a physicist? It doesn't work that way. You don't have to do that trick. If you think of mass as solid, that's because you are trusting your senses and you look at something and it looks solid most of the time if you're at the usual way of seeing things. Everybody agrees it's solid. When it hits you, it hurts. It must be real. When you get a little more sophisticated in rational ways, if you get a little further into physics, you understand about the relation of mass and energy, and you understand that what appears as mass only appears that way because of the nature of the receiving apparatus of your senses, and that in fact all solids are in fact just energy, they're patterns of energy, that you could call them slowed down light. And when it is slowed down and forms into certain patterns, it gets gross enough so you can see it through your eyes. It's just like going from infrared or ultraviolet through the spectrum of the visual field. When the vibration rate changes, you can see it. Or if it gets to a point where you can't see it or can't hear it. If it gets too high, only dogs can hear it. You can't hear it. As you go up in that rate of that frequency, that vibrational frequency, you get to light. You get to thought. See, the reason we can't measure thought yet, really, is because we just don't have apparatuses for measuring at those vibrational rates yet. I mean, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of cases of people transmitting thought from one being to another. I once visited J.B. Rhine down at Duke, North Carolina, and J.B. was sitting there with this peculiar position on his desk, piled like yay high, and in closets are letters from thousands of people describing the experience of thought transmission. But when he tries to do it in the laboratory, he can only do a little better than chance. It's like we know it exists, but we can't know we know it. It's one of those problems again. Can't know we know it. Keep going faster and faster in the vibratory rate, and in the smallness of the unit that's vibrating, until you get to the tiniest quanta of energy. Tiniest quanta of energy. It is so tiny that it's only in combination that it makes up atoms, or makes up the components of atoms even. Physicists now work with these things theoretically. That energy is so fine that the entire universe is composed of it, and it's solid. You, Mars, the air, vacuum, the flowers, the candle flame, my thought, it's all made up of the same stuff. It's just in patterns. It's just in patterns. Now, if you are able, this is a fact I am telling you now from where I'm sitting, if you are able to pursue the discipline of extricating your awareness, your consciousness from your own senses and from your own thought, you become part of that finest energy. What are the qualities of that energy? It is totally interchangeable in everything in the universe. Totally interchangeable. So that if a part of it was a part of this flower at this moment, it might be part of Mars the next moment, or a part of the vacuum the next moment. It's all the same stuff. At that point, when you look at, if you could look at the world, if you could clear away all that stuff out of your eyes and see the universe at that level of energy, if you could turn your receiver so you could get it at that level, all you would see was a homogeneous white light. You'd see the clear white light. You would see, you'd say, that is all and everything. And yet it has no form to it. Because it is where energy lies behind form. Where energy lies behind form. When you are able to extricate yourself from the time and space illusion, and it is an illusion as it turns out, the question is, who am I? Who am I? Am I this body? Am I these senses? Am I this thought process? I, cogito ergo sum. It's a lie. It's a lie. Sum ergo cogito is perhaps reasonable. That's a lie too, but so are all words. In Sanskrit, what happens when you pursue yoga, which means union, yoga or union, you go behind the form. You go into the place where it is all one. All one. That place in Sanskrit is called Sat Chit Ananda. Sat Chit Ananda. Sat Chit Ananda is the kingdom of heaven. Ram Tirth, the poet, who was a realized being, describes Satchitananda from inside. He lives on the other side of the doorway. See, on the other side of the doorway, you see there's no doorway. There's only a doorway from this side. It's another paradigm. He says, I am without form, without limit. I am beyond space, beyond time. I am in everything. Everything is in me. I am the bliss of the universe. Everywhere am I. I am Sat, absolute existence, Chit, absolute knowledge, Ananda, absolute bliss, Tat Tvam Asi, I am that, Tat Tvam Asi, I am that. Sat, Chit, Ananda. Think of the fine energy now. What is the fine energy, the quality of the fine energy? It permeates everything. Remember I said about Padmasambhava, he is pure light, he is pure consciousness, he is pure love, he is pure wisdom, he is pure energy. Do you understand that identity? I am talking about a specific identity. Very cold, systematic identity. When you go up the pyramid, and this is what Plato suspected when he got into his realm of pure ideas. When you go up the pyramid, follow beauty all the way back. Follow love all the way back, behind interpersonal love. Follow energy back as the physicists are doing. You end up at the top of the place where it all turns out to be the same. Do you understand that that fine energy we've just been talking about is the same exact thing as what we call consciousness? The universe is conscious. It is consciousness. It is not self-conscious. It does not know it knows. It just is. It is. It is consciousness. Sat Chit Ananda. My guru, who is a guy that lives on the other side of the doorway, he just is. He doesn't sit around knowing he knows. The candle flame doesn't sit around saying, I am being a candle flame. It's just being a candle flame. If there is a requirement, a motive, a desire, desire brings the guru from being in the place where he is just like the candle flame, just part of consciousness, the vast pure energy that is consciousness, it brings him back down into form. Brings him down into form. Brings him down into knowing he knows. I mean, I meet the guru, and I'm there by chance, and I go up, and in a few minutes, he tells me all about things that have happened to me in my past. And he tells me things that he can't know by any means I know he knows, by any of the usual techniques of knowing one knows. So when he does that to me, he completely takes me the next step. He creates the faith. He blows my mind. Lest ye see miracles, ye will not believe, Christ said with great compassion. I was one of those people. It's the kind of Western cynicism that is the basis of science also. I'll entertain the hypothesis. No. That's cynicism. The null hypothesis. The null hypothesis. There is no relationship until I can demonstrate with a certain degree of probability that there is a relationship. It's the kind of Western cynicism that is the basis of science also. I'll entertain the hypothesis. No. That's cynicism. The null hypothesis. The null hypothesis. There is no relationship until I can demonstrate with a certain degree of probability that there is a relationship. And he did that thing and he cut through what had to be cut through. Now, did he sit there and say, like, well, here's this cat, I think I will remember, I will tell him that? No, that's thinking, that's knowing you know. He isn't there at all. He was just being, he was being a leaf on a tree, like, and I came along and there was in me a desire to get ahead, cut through my cynicism, and it was my desire which brought that thing out of him. It was my desire which brought that thing out of him. Now, this is very far out, and if you can grasp it, it's really very, very important. Very important. Because to be that pure energy is just a state of total being. And when I say you aren't who you think you are, it's because you define yourself in terms of doing versus being. Knowing you know, your thoughts, your body and what it does. You say, I'm a lawyer, or I'm an architect, or I'm a hippie, or whatever you are. You define yourself in terms of social roles, in terms of actions. How do I know myself? As if I'm a behavior studying myself from outside. The fact of the matter is, when you go in and in and in and in and in and behind that role and that role and that role and that one too, you get to a place where you just are. Just pure isness. It's pure isness. Pure awareness. Pure consciousness. Pure energy. If you really reside in that, then you live in Sat-Chit-Ananda. That means you no longer live in this time-space locus called the body. That's the beginning of what is, at the lower levels, is called astral travel. See, astral travel still means going from point A to point B. So it must mean there's some finite being that goes from A to B. The guru is beyond astral travel. He is point A and point B. That's what I said. If we knew who we really are, there'd only be one of us here. There is only one consciousness in the whole universe. And when you cut through the drama, you reside in that place, in this place, in here, in here, in here. Now, do you understand what chit means? Absolute knowledge. Absolute knowledge. I mean, can you imagine what you've been doing? You've been, when I said to you, there's nothing I can say you don't already know, you didn't believe me. You didn't really believe me. You thought I was putting you on. I mean, you are actually probably, and I do the same thing, you go into bookstores and you buy a book, like there's something in the book you aren't. You realize you're already the book, if you but knew. I mean, my teacher, he's like, he's a very pure being. He's not as high as the guru, but he's a very, he's got a number of siddhis or powers. He'll take a book like this, he'll pick it up and, yeah, there are some things in it that'll be helpful to you. You got to be around these people for quite a while before you understand they're not putting you on. In their world, there are no hypes. There's nothing but total truth, total purity, total purity. They live in the spirit. They live in this place. So what we are in is a journey called the evolution of consciousness. It is God coming to know himself, which finally becomes himself. Because you understand, let me show you the levels, the way it works. You're at the physical plane, where you're receiving vibrations at a certain rate, so all you see when you look around you in this room are other gross physical beings. You're not seeing any of the astral beings in this room at this moment, most of you. Some of you are. Some of you see the astral bodies in each other by seeing auras. Others of you don't see those auras. Some of you, when you see the aura, you think it's a trick that the light's playing on you, because you don't trust the processes that happen in you. Many of you are higher than you let yourself be most of the time. That's the fact of the matter. Most people are constantly having experiences where they break through the veil and they reject it almost all the time because it doesn't fit in with the existing model. It's always happening. The physical plane is the plane at which you're at this vibrational rate and you've got a body and you're... What keeps you there, now you've got to understand what I'm going to say about desire is what keeps you there is your own desire. The only reason, like Ramakrishna Paramahansa, the beautiful, beautiful saint in India, Ramakrishna. Ramakrishna was in such a high state, he had a terrible time staying in his body. It was a terrible problem. He kept drifting off. And he had to keep creating desires in order to stay in his body, in order to be to hang out for his because his trip was to help people do their thing, I guess. I mean, I'm not in cosmic government, so I don't I don't recall giving him his assignment if I did. So he'd say, I'm thirsty, get me a glass of water. And they get him a glass of water, he says, oh, I couldn't touch a drop. He said, I thought you wanted a glass of water. I just wanted to want something to bring me back here. I had to be... For those of you that don't understand, over there is a raised platform, and around it there is a pool that is filled with charcoal, but there's no water in it at the moment. And all that you hear, which sounds like horses in stables, is the charcoal, and somebody may have just fallen off the... It is desire, it is our desire that keeps us in this physical plane. I'll explain more about that in a second. Now there's a physical plane, and when you have finished with the desires that keep you with the physical plane, when you have finished with that level of desire, then you move into the next plane, which is called the astral plane. And the astral plane is a plane where beings dwell just like you and me, except their desires are more subtle and the desires do not require that they have physical manifestations. And all the beings you've ever read about in all the nursery books and all of the fairy tales and the Bible and all these things about demons and devils and goblins and fairies and nymphs and Padmasambhava and all these, they're all hanging out at the astral plane. And they're all real. Because that plane is just as real as this is. It's just another cut, another vibrational cut. just another vibrational cut. And if you can go from what happens to most people, like we've all witnessed recently the drama of James Pike and his son Jim. And Jim shot himself and then, or died somehow, I guess he shot himself, and then he was in contact with his father after, across the plains, through a medium. A medium is a being who can tune in on the astral plane. Now what happens is this astral plane, this next level out, has a number of layers to it. You've got to understand that all the time we in the West were busy charting the moon and the trip to the moon and how to work in the frontiers of the West and how to dig into the ocean. There have been a lot of guys who have been busy charting the inner world and these other domains, and there are beautiful maps and charts if you can read them, if you have enough faith to be able to open yourself to be able to see what they're above. So there are many, many, many levels. You could probably, in most of the Sanskrit literature, there's 6 or 7 levels above this one. The first one out is what is in the Christian Bible called heaven and hell, and it's that kind of a level. It's got all those things in it. See, the Lord, the Christian Lord, is a manifestation. He's got his throne, and he's got his angels, and all that seen around him. That's all astral. That's all astral. And as Bhagavad Gita says, those that pray to the gods, go to the gods. If you desire to go to heaven, that's where you go, to heaven, which is the first plane of the astral plane. It's a very groovy place to go. There's 6 more above it, so don't get too hung up there, but it's a nice place. Certainly good. Good people go there. Persian Rumi says, I died as mineral and became a plant. I died as plant and rose to animal. I died as animal and I was man. Why should I fear? When was I ever less by dying? Yet once more I shall die as man to soar with angels blessed. But even from angelhood I must pass on. All except God doth perish. When I have sacrificed my angel soul, I shall become what no mind e'er conceived. Oh, let me not exist, for non-existence proclaims in organ tones, to him we shall return. God and that fine energy and Padmasambhava and your Atma, it's all the same stuff. All the same thing. It's behind it all. It's behind the physical plane, behind the astral plane, and we got one more plane to go. We got the causal plane. The causal plane is what Plato was talking about. It's a plane of pure ideas. And the planes are like this. Each plane subsumes the next planes. When you finish with the grossest desires that keep you here on the physical plane, then you're left with a lot of subtle desires. Like, you want to be God of the wind? Baby, you're going to be God of the wind. I mean, you don't realize how it's all going to come out. Wait till you see. It's really going to blow your mind. You're going to be everything you ever wanted to be. That's the funny part about the astral trip. You do it all yet. Everybody does it all. It's in store for everyone. Don't worry about it. You don't have to be chosen. You can be anything you want. At the astral plane, you can create your universes. You're given that privilege. You're also given the wisdom to know how to not screw it up, because your ego's gotten very subtle, very subtle. There's still desire, and as long as there's desire, there's still ego. As long as there's desire, there's still an astral plane. Your desire creates your universe. That's the rule of thumb. Desire creates the universe, be it physical, astral, or causal. So you get finished with the gross things that keep you on the astral plane. I mean, you really want to have that full color experience. You want to travel like light. You want to bathe in ambrosial bliss. You want to hang on to bliss because it feels so good? Sure, man, you're going to have plenty of chance. Then you got to give that one up, too. Got to give that one up, too. I have a guru brother who is in the Himalayas. He is in a cave in the Himalayas. He is a 23-year-old Westerner from Laguna Beach. Except he happens to be a very high being. I'll tell you why, who's what in a second. He is spending most of his time in this cave on the astral plane. He's doing his astral work at the moment. Because the rules of this game are, when you start the trip, as you get purer, as your mind gets karma through meditation, as you learn to work with the energies, you can easily get out of the time-space locus and the gross physical plane. Then you go into the next plane. But you got a lot of work to do there because it's very seductive, and you got to go a lot of trips there, just like you're going trips here. And if you do enough, you can do the whole thing through the physical, causal, astral, and causal, all in one lifetime. Once you're on the path, if you just don't get caught in the cul-de-sacs. And this is what he has to say about this. He's in this cave in the Himalayas. This is his letter to me. Crystal clear illumination. Here we are, sitting in the flowers, rock, raindrop, birds, fire, spring of light. Last night we tuned the sitar to the morning star, and the goddess herself came in dazzling brilliance as mind dances Sahajananda, great Ananda, great bliss. Vastness, effortlessness, emptiness, wrapped up in two hands hold hot wooden bowl of chai, tea, with wisps of mist and steaming jade. Baba Ram Das Ji, that's me, is nowhere to be found, but a hollow bamboo is growing outside the window. Who could have imagined that right from the first, mind is absolutely pure? Who could have believed that right from the first, not a thing is? Here in the North Country, winds blow heavy from Himalayas as I collect sticks and wood for Duni, for the fire. As abiding is really no abiding, I'm abiding in this kuti, this cave. A lot of ancient Chinese days and nights with gong-blowing mind and flying sky dragons and Vajra Yogini dances, lightning bolt goddesses dancing. In the womb of time, complete abandonment. The nectar is Amakala, dripping everywhere at every moment from union, wisdom, love, dance of sun and moon, which conceives bodhicitta, conceives pure intellect. In other words, intellect's one level down. Naked, freezing to death in the middle of a roaring fire, lay it down, drop it, let go, sing it out, throw it out. Going all the way is holy, but alas, some linger on the path to see and smell the pretty golden sunflower, or hold hands with eternity, or practice ecstasy bliss, or circulate the light, or reach neither perception nor non-perception, but lingering anywhere you might, get stuck for kalpas, for ages. But the sahaja sthiti samadhi, the final samadhi, is really no samadhi. Therefore, it's really the end. Since there is no end, you can't put the end anywhere. Blue sky and Buddha sits throwing blanket over shoulder, sending apples in all directions at once. Ram Das Baba Kaisahai Tikai Bumt Acha Adni Jau Jau Jau. And lingering is gone, 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 well gone, long gone, gone beyond the beyond. Maharaji, our guru, is nothing special, and yet his body fills the universe. You can't go forwards or backwards or stand still. Move